this is out now.
Knights.
This is Knights 30.
Only
3-0. Big 3-0.
Divided by 11, we're averaging like, you know, a whopping like 3.1 a year.
Yeah, not a lot of Knights episodes, but when they're here, they're special.
Yeah.
And the reason we're doing this episode, this Knights episode, is because Abe, you weren't able to be on the full review for us.
No, I wasn't.
Dune Part 2. And we figured now that we've gotten past the exhaustion of detailing Hollywood's biggest night, we have some extra time here where we can go over.
I know this is going to drop at a later time, but you and I were just doing some math about how much we've been recording in the past week.
Yeah.
And it's got to at least be like 4.5-5 hours. Or no. 2-3. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So like, yeah, 4.5-5 hours.
And we're about to add on a 3-hour Pirates of the Caribbean podcast.
That's going to be a lot. So. Yeah. This is a free podcast.
Yeah. All this content. But yeah, so you weren't able to talk to us about Dune in full length here.
Yeah.
So I figured, why not? How about you, give us your full thoughts on Dune Part 2, and then we can kind of dig into the stuff we didn't get to talk about in the main episode, you know?
Oh, you're talking some spoiler stuff?
Some spoiler stuff, exactly.
Oh, man, just full blown. Yeah. I really enjoyed Dune 2. I think the first time that I watched it twice, the first time I saw it, I think I was kind of trying to figure out, because I had heard some pre-stuff. I didn't read a whole ton about it, but I heard some pre-stuff like, oh, you know, again, Two Towers and Empire Strikes Back. I was like, okay, so maybe there's going to be some, you know, hour-long fight scene. Not really an hour-long fight scene. Very condensed, like, 45 minutes.
Brief. Yeah, no, there's certainly a lot of action. I think something I praised was the fact that once you get the big final battle, they realize they don't need to stick around that battle a long time. You get a few good shots, then it's like, we're done. Like, do we need 30 more minutes of this, or can we just get inside the pyramid, do whatever we're going to do?
And do what we're doing, what we're going to do.
Do what we're going to got to do.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed it for a lot of reasons. A, the spectacle is fantastic.
Sure.
We talked about this in the first one. Villeneuve has a really good mind and eye for scale. Just how large things are, how small things are, you know, in comparison to other objects. And the score is, I like Dune 2 score a lot better than first one. Not that the first one was bad, but it had a lot more riffs and it had a lot more like darkness in it, which I really dug. I also really liked the comeuppance. I don't know if it's like an ascension for Zendaya and Chalamet, but it certainly felt like an arrival of sorts of like, hey, by the way, you guys have seen me in movies, and Chalamet has been in more dramatic stuff. Zendaya, I haven't seen her new movie, the tennis movie.
Challengers.
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, have you seen that?
No, because it's coming out in April.
Yeah.
But I hear what you're saying there. Like, Zendaya, we've seen in movie-wise, it's been the Spider-Man, a few other things. But, yeah. I mean, I don't watch it, but she does have that Euphoria show where that
yes, I was gonna say
multiple
same.
Emmys for. I mean, it's
right. Yeah. I haven't seen the Euphoria, so I haven't seen her dramatic stuff there. But just, I think she really carries a lot of the movie on second watch, too. Of just like, yes, a lot of visual face acting and a lot of emotional core stuff. But what I dug at the center of it, especially in the second viewing, is the devastation factor of it all. It's basically Paul just saying, I don't really want to do this because I know what's going to happen and it's a bad thing that's going to happen. And kind of just all signs kind of pointing toward, you have to do this. And he's like, I guess. I mean, obviously that turn comes very quick, which, you know, plot wise, you got to do what you got to do to accelerate the plot. But it is just an unfortunate thing because he really sets himself up as like this guy who just wants to be Fremen, wants to really help out in the cause, kind of just like really go against the powers at hand, and kind of get revenge for what they did to his family and his father and his people. And it was kind of a bummer that you're just like, he's been fighting this. The transitions are so smooth in the movie in terms of time passage of time, mm-hmm. that you don't really get a sense of it. But it's a long time that he's spending with the Fremen, kind of really becoming, I forget the term of the war that they are. I don't know if you remember, but it's just a long passage of time. He really becomes one of those folks. It's great. And then
it's like a decent amount of time, but like, she's still pregnant. So it's like, it's not,
I know, that's the part that threw me off.
Cause I know the,
and the book.
The book, and now, you know, based on just like what the Lynch movie, like there's 2 years that passed.
Yeah, right? it's quite lengthy. Yes, yeah.
So, that,
yeah,
that baby just, gets born, and you know,
no, maybe Space Baby. They just, you know.
Well, I mean, the book wise, the baby does end the movie. The other movie,
that's
the
right. Yeah, baby, if you watch 84 Dune, yeah. you see his sister show up.
She shows up, and she kills Stellan Skarsgård. She kills the Baron,
uncle. Yeah,
in the original text. So
yeah. But no, in general, it was a really, really good spectacle. I really just enjoyed the political machinations at hand from the Baron and the Emperor. But I also just really dug that there's a lot going into how people see Paul. You know, people see him as this Messiah. One faction sees him as this Messiah. One faction sees him as a means to revenge. I'm talking about Gurney. And then one part sees him as just a love interest slash a conflicted character, and that's you know, the Chani character, and it's a bummer because they all want different things for him, and he kind of is trying to serve all masters, so to speak, until he's just like, fuck it, I gotta do what I gotta do, and then, like, you know, the guitar stuff kicks in and it's great. So I really dug a lot of the plot in the second one. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm just trying to feel this all out. Second time I watched it, I was like, I get it now. I get it. This is really cool.
Yeah, it's certainly very textured in that way, where, like, I saw it twice, too, mainly just because I wanted to. But I didn't get to see it with my dad the first time, and he really liked Dune also. And so he was super excited to see the second one, and he really liked it as well. But, you know, I was happy to, you know, see it the second time because, yes, there is, like, there's a lot going on, despite the fact that I think it's made to be very straightforward. Yeah. In terms of presentation, like, obviously you can read into the various themes and ideas or whatnot that's going on.
They're very on the nose.
There's plenty of complexity going on. But yes, in terms of, like, how to make this a kind of a agreeable blockbuster, clearly it worked, because Dune is a very dense novel. And it's the idea of, you know, making two movies out of this makes sense. But how do you make that so audiences, you know, will consume it with ease? And yeah, that's, I think, one of the very biggest gifts that this movie has to offer is that Villeneuve and his co-writer John Spates, they did the job of presenting something to you that's, you know, you can follow along with fairly simply, even if you, and if you want to, like, delve in even further, you can, and find out all these things about the different factions and the technology of the time and the rituals and the religion and all that. It's all there. But in that regard, yeah, seeing it a second time and just seeing it in general, like, the outside of, like, the stuff I wanted to see, you know, sandworms and whatever Austin Butler's doing, like, I wanted to get the idea down to behind this Bene Gesserit, the whole religious aspect, because I find it to be fascinating. The idea that there's this, you know, idea of a Messiah that's been created by them, and that goes so far back where it's like, I'm not, like, how does the purpose of that come into play? And it, like, but yet it's still, like, understood to be manufactured, but only by, like, some of the people, and that's, like, that's core understandings of how religion works, and the way this one's commenting on that I find to be just really, really interesting. And so and at the center of it, you have Chalamet, where, like I said on the podcast and like I said on the first movie, I feel like this is a character that could have so easily been just kind of whatever, just kind of like, yeah, there's the Paul, like, what, we'll get to the other cooler characters, but I find him to be so good in these movies and so affecting in, yes, having to play a different range of emotion to get you to this place where you can understand his inner plight, where he has visions of the future and he knows that there's nothing good lying ahead for him, but he's also like, there's no other way I can get through to do what I need to do. And so you see that inner conflict, you see these relationships that he has, whether or not you, like, buy into the whole romance angle with Chani, like, you know, that's neither here nor there for me, because I'm just like, I still accept that he's making a very difficult decision. And even if you're in on it with him, as far as by the end of this movie, when he's, like, proposing to Florence Pugh's character, it's like, I get that. Obviously that's, like, a marriage of convenience for the sake of doing what he needs
to
do.
It's a power play. Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing about that that's, like, him betraying the love that he has, but the fact that he has to, like, go through this and not cleanly square it away with the one person that, like, seems to want to see through all this Messiah stuff for the sake of him just being like, you're just this guy that I think is pretty good at stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot.
The Chalamet part, you know, the first part I was like, or the, in the Dune part one, it's a lot of him being young and, you know, seeing kind of like the real world.
The second one,
I was like, I'm curious, like, how they're going to expand on the Paul character. Cause I kind of know that he has to get into, like, this leadership position, dude, when he fucking gives his speech in Fremen, and then like puts on the rings, like I'm like Paul Muddeeb Atreides. I was like, this guy fucking has it. You know what I mean? Like, that is a very incredible scene just from how they set it all up to begin with. But when he's talking about all this stuff here, at a certain point, I was like, I this is not a parlor trick for one. So he's definitely saying like all across all time and space, historical. But you know, in terms of like being the one, still nobody knows. I mean, this is what's fascinating about other movies that have kind of use this idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's The Matrix or any number
Lego
of
movie,
the Lego movie, Master Builders. Yeah, but you know, like even in The Matrix specifically, it's like that version of Neo that we saw was like not the first one. Like even the architect says that, you know, you're like the seventh iteration of this or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So it's very fascinating. Just that I don't know, but Paul has to believe in some capacity. And then, therefore, a lot of other people start believing. But it's just a really cool screen presence for Chalamet as he gets there. I've seen some minutes breakdown. So it's like as he gets there, like in the last hour of the movie, pretty strong stuff from Chalamet. And again, Zendaya, not light work either. She's got to do a lot of reacting, which is very quiet. But it's also apparently like a different take from the book, where
the Chinese character is far more on Paul's side the whole time mm-hmm. in the other versions of this story. Where here, she has conflict. There's more agency in her character.
100% more agency. Apparently, people are like, "Well, I don't really know how this is going to work out if she's a stronger character." It's like it works out great because she is this person that is from the north. She doesn't really believe in the prophecies. She believes in her people. And you know what happens? Like, everyone starts going crazy around her. And she's like, am I taking crazy pills? And at one point, I was thinking, like, well, she and Gurney are going to be fine because they're going to, like, team up and be like, nah, don't worry. Like, you know, we'll keep Paul under wraps. And then Gurney gets into it, you know? And it's just like, now everyone has turned, like, this zealot. And the devastation kind of comes from what they have to do, because I want to get back to something very quickly, which is you're talking about the romance angle of things. The romance angle of things works for me. It doesn't really detract from the storyline. They're not doing anything like egregiously, like, oh, well, let's, you know, have them talk about sand and how much, or they do, but you know, like Star Wars style, where it's like he doesn't like it because it gets all over the place, or they're not like running away to like a different part of the map just to like have like a, you know, Armageddon style sequence where he's like,
it's less about the idea of it having like cheesy elements. It's more about just, do you buy that chemistry as them as romantic partners? I feel like that's the bigger question. Good. Okay.
Yeah. I do too.
Like, it's, is it like the strongest element for me? No, not necessarily, but I recognize the chemistry they have. Even if it's not like, you know, I don't know, MJ and Peter Parker and the Raimi Spider-Man movies or something like that.
Sure.
You know, I think there's enough there for sure.
Yeah, there's enough there so that when the tragedy drama part kicks in, it works for me. You know, and I had read some stuff where people were saying, it's a bummer that he did this to Chani at the end. It's like, he's not doing it to spite her or just because, you know, you had heard him 10 minutes ago say, I'm going to love you or I'll love you as long as I breathe kind of thing. He's doing it, as what Aaron and I just mentioned, for like his what he sees as his gain to ascendancy, so that he could do the ruling of the entire galaxy.
I mean that's certainly, you know, that's what he's telling himself what he has to do.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not like he's not foreseeing visions of terrible, terrible things. Right, and he's told her about those visions. He's told her that, you know, if I succumb to being the Messiah character, there is a lot of bad in the future here. And he doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean he necessarily knows what his role in it is. And that's what frightens all of them. That's what frightens him and her, as far as does that mean he's like, the thing that I think this movie could do better is show how much the spice is really affecting the mind of him.
He's
not from it. Cause that is that is a huge thing. The fact that he's so like, you know, he's eating the spice and it's within his body and everything, and he's not, you know, he didn't grow up with it. That is something that causes a level of like it messes with the mind. And
yeah. Which he references a couple times in the movie.
It does. It's like, it's not devoid of any of those references, but I do think there's ways, I think, to communicate that a little stronger that the movie doesn't quite do, just because Villeneuve's more of a subtle filmmaker.
Yeah. He's also very visual, as he said in recent comments, which is true.
So, yeah. So with that, I mean, yes, it's like, we can certainly understand that, like, yeah, there's not an intentionality to, like, he's not just taking on the princess for the sake of, I just suddenly decided to fall in love with somebody else. No, that's not it. But it's like, what's next? And by the end of this movie, I mean, they're launching a holy war.
Yeah.
Mean, it's like that, which we know is going to have terrible consequences. What will that lead to exactly? Who knows right now?
Yeah.
Who will be involved? Who's the true Messiah even? I mean, there's a damn baby inside.
Stay tuned for next week.
There's a damn baby inside of Lady Jessica that's communicating with her.
Yeah. And, psychically communicating, asking, you know, what's happening.
There is another, as Yoda once said.
That's right. Yeah, there's so, another. Like, yeah. And that's where I think that it's very fascinating where this movie leaves off, which is Johnny leaves. She has very conflicted feelings on her face, one of being hurt and betrayed, and another of resolve and anger. And then, yes, you have Lady Jessica talking to, I forget her name, Aria or something like
you
that.
You just saw her, Baby Anya Taylor-Joy.
Baby Anya Taylor-Joy.
Aaliyah is the name.
Aaliyah, thank you. And basically saying, hey, the Holy War starting. There was also, when people were like, when Paul says, lead them to paradise, mm-hmm. or take them to paradise, whatever the line reading is.
Yeah,
like people were like, "This is gonna be great," and the first time I watched it, I was like, my heart sank. I was like, "This is unfortunate," because he's basically saying, "Kill them all." You know what I mean? And that it's just, again, the tragedy of it is a bummer of what Paul wanted to do, and then what he's being kind of forced to do by both his mother, who is Bene Gesserit and now Reverend Mother. And also just like all these people that are on this planet that are really like inspired by him. It's just, yeah, what a bummer.
Two things I want to mention. One, okay. Before I forget it. That bit where they're all in the palace or whatever at the end of Arrakis.
Okay.
And Paul, Charlotte Rampling's talking to Paul, and Paul, he just yells silence at her. And she doesn't realize that he's been taught the voice by Lady Jessica the whole time. And so when Charlotte Rampling, when she looks at Rebecca Ferguson to like give her a look, is like, you taught him?
Yeah.
And she gives him a look back, was like, yeah, I did. Like, it's such a good fuck you moment.
Yeah. There's a lot of like manipulation fuck you in the end. Do you remember what she says to him too when he does the voice on her?
What she's always say?
She says abomination.
There it is. Yeah, abomination.
Because yeah, exactly what you say. Because Lady Jessica has taught a male some of the powers of the Bene Gesserit, including the voice, and so it's usually bestowed upon women and females, and that's why they're just like, well, you know, Lady Jessica, your role is this, and you're supposed to be doing this, and we don't want you to go rogue. And she kind of goes rogue.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is great. You know. Again, I also like. Again, the political dealings, even that, where they're having their mental discussion of just like, mm-hmm. you chose the wrong side. You should have chosen Paul and backed him all the way. It's like, lady, there are no sides. Don't you know this? This turns into like a Royal Tenenbaum situation by Gene Hackman shooting Ben Stiller in the knuckle with a BB gun. There are no sides, Chaz. But I want to get into something.
Because I had two things. The other thing I wanted to ask you. Yes. It's by the end of this movie, you know, we have what we have at the end. I'm curious, from your perspective, do you feel like this ends strongly on a note, as far as, does this feel like a nice singular ending to you, or do you feel like it's a very specific cliffhanger in the same way that the first movie was?
So I did struggle with this the first time. The second time was more definitive. The first time I was like, oh, well, that's, I mean, they're going to make Messiah, right? And then, you know, I think that we discussed it very briefly that they may or may not. It hasn't really been actively announced. There are talks, rumors. Second time I watched it, like, this is actually, it's actually a pretty solid ending. If they were to choose to end it here, it's not bad. You know, like, Paul has to go do his thing. He's kind of chosen the dark side, so to speak. And then everyone is rising to power, and China's just like, fuck it, I'm out, you know? And again, the way that they end it, is it a cliffhanger? Maybe, but you don't really need to see. I don't need to see like the destruction of all the other houses in the galaxy, you know, as like a 3-hour war kind of thing. And I also don't need to see, I guess, Anya Taylor, baby Anya Taylor Joy kind of come through. Like the only things that would be of I guess, additional significance is after this particular war, right? What happens after the war? What happens to Paul Atreides? What happens to, I forget, Florence Pugh's character, the princess? And then what happens to the mother and baby Anya Taylor-Joy kind of thing? But if it ends here, I'd be like, this is actually a pretty incredible ending, like just to choose to end it this way, which is not necessarily, again, Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1 kind of thing, right? Sure. Like it is... It does have ends, like everyone kind of just strays onto their own pathway, which I guess is why I guess maybe some Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back type of feel. But at the same time, if we were to never return to this book series, this planet, Villeneuve decides never to do this again and kind of just hands off the reins to somebody else with his blessing as an EP. It's totally fine as is. You could definitely say like this is... this is Villeneuve's Dune, and then you just continue on with kind of like an Aliens franchise or Alien franchise, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go too far into things that I talked about on the other show with Ali. Mm-hmm. And
no, tell Russ, me.
But just to follow that up, I do think that the end. I mean, for one thing, it's the book, so I mean, it's like they finished the book that's written to begin mm-hmm. with, so that's the ending that they have. But I agree. No, I do think this is a. Well, like it's very clear, like it was very clear to me halfway through the movie. I'm like, there's no way that every single one of these storylines is going to be tied up. So clearly there's like mm-hmm. There's probably gonna be an opening to do more. But by the end of this movie, there's certainly a definitive ending to the arc that was being opened up in the first movie. As sure. far as Chalamet has to come into his own, or Paul has to come into his own. There's various subplots of different characters that need to be, you know, satisfied in the way the first film sets things up, where you have obviously the Harkonnen come in and blast the fuck out of the
Atreides. I like that you call it Harkonnen 84 style.
Yeah, the Harkonnen.
Like, I think that's like some people are like that's the real way to pronounce it.
The well, they're brutal. the Harkonnen come in, and you know they fuck shit up for the Atreides. So it's like, yeah. Well, naturally, this movie, and that was not an issue I had, but it's certainly something I pointed out. Was like this movie by default. Is a bit more predictable in a lot of ways, just because
sure.
it's the fallout of what happened from the, you know, it's yeah. It's the follow through on what happened in the first movie, because it's mm-hmm. half a movie. Although I appreciated the ending of the last movie, as far as it felt like an appropriate place to put it if you're going to make a part two.
Regardless, yeah, even if they even where they end part one, you could be like, and he never picked up part two, even though he was already filming it. If they had never started part two, it's like it's a fine ending too.
Yeah, like it comes to a close that I was satisfied with. I know there is. Some mixed reactions as far as like yeah. it feels like we're just like leaving off.
Trust me. I was surprised. I was like, this is part one, because they had not done that in the marketing at that time. They were just like, go see Dune, and then at the end there, it's like Dune part one.
They didn't specifically highlight that it says part one at the beginning. I'll say that. But the marketing does. Yeah, it doesn't explain that like this is merely like. A part of the book, right, the marketing right. does it. I will say it was known as far as it's not going to cover the whole book.
Okay.
Like, but yeah, but, and with that, yeah, like I walked away from that first one thinking like, I'm happy with how they came to a conclusion for this first film, but mm-hmm. like, yes, obviously I want to see like where this goes from here. So mm-hmm. watching this movie, yes, that's what I'm getting. You see where it goes. You see as far as like the things that need to happen that make sense to finish, to close off the arc sets up in part one. Makes mm-hmm. sense here. Obviously, there's places for the third one to go. And given that it's a huge, you know, it's already a huge success, it's definitely going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, they got to write some things out of the script.
And Villeneuve's in the position where he's like, okay, I'll go, you know, he'll take some money and make like his own Malignant and then do this. You know,
yeah, 100%. That's what I appreciate about Denis is just like, he has no real need to rush this. You know, even this has been a passion project. When he spoke about this at the DGAs mm-hmm. With Nolan.
Yeah.
He's like, I read this book when I was 12 or 13 and I loved it. And I would storyboard the movie out at like 12, 13, 14, 15 in my head and on paper. And I've always wanted to do Dune. And look what happens when directors do passion projects that they are really in. Like, this is not the only example of it. The other example that comes to mind immediately is Jordan Peele with Get Out. He's like, this is something that's been in my head for like a decade. I didn't want to sell the rights to anybody else because I wanted to do it myself and I wanted to get it perfect, right? This is a great example of like, let directors who have passions pursue those passions or those specific ideas, because look what you get. You get this really well thought out thing. I actually want to go into details, not details like in terms of every aspect, but specific details that I really liked about the Dune series and the characters coming up. But, you know, again, Denis, no slouch. He really loves this world. He really wanted to make Paul Atreides come to life the way that he saw it. And what's amazing is like, it's like a global sensation.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I fully welcome like seeing more of this, mm-hmm. and whatever that's going to be. I don't know these books. If the idea is that Villeneuve is going to make three and then done, cool. Sure. But that makes me wonder, like, is it just going to be like the Dune Messiah book, or is it going to be like a bunch of other books? It all turn into like one movie. I have no idea what to expect. Yeah. And I love that. I love that I can know that a movie has places to go as far as what's next, but I have no idea what that's going to look like from here.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is the wall of all the sandworms. If he's going off planet, I don't know what's off planet. I don't know what else is out there. Like, so
whole big universe.
I don't know what to expect in ways that are, you know, pretty exciting as far as.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. I think because it was 3 to 5 years out, you know, I was like, I don't know if I can wait 3 to 5 years. A lot can change. A lot might not happen. I did read some Wikipedia articles ahead of time. I won't talk about them here, but I was like, okay, I kind of get a sense of where it's going. Cause even at the end of Dune Part Two, I was thinking to myself, oh, I can kind of see things veering off into certain directions, and maybe this character becomes much more prominent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I could not wait. And I'm probably going to forget it by the time that the actual movie gets released, if it ever gets released. But I was like, yep, I'm going to just check this out, because it's probably going to be, it could potentially be a tragic tale, right? Did you have a second point? You said you had 2 points.
No, that was the second point. The first was the Bene Gesserit mother thing.
Those Bene Gesserit.
The question I have for you now.
Yep.
I enthused heavily about how much I like Austin Butler in this movie as Fade Royce. I'm curious what you think of Austin Butler's very specific performance here.
His very specific performance is very good. I don't know if people were calling it like it's as good as a villain as like Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. I don't know about that. Like, it's a really memorable villain because he's so crazy. But is it one of those things where his screen time impacts the way that I view the movie? Kind of, but not necessarily. Like, he is impactful. You know what I mean? And Austin Butler certainly has a presence. If you've seen Elvis, but even before that, if you saw
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, yeah. He's on the screen for like, what, 3 minutes? He's very.
He rides a horse around.
Tries to like. He gets much of the face, which is hilarious.
He's in all of the climax. I mean, he's in that movie. Like, anyway. he's got plenty to do.
Yeah, yeah. But in terms
it got,
of this
it
movie,
got him this role. I mean, like along with Elvis. So.
As far as like he goes in this movie, it is. I really like the way that it's portrayed, which is, hey, you're just a really crazy dude. I actually like when they kind of give him when they give the audience via exposition his biography and his whole entire like. His weaknesses, you know, he's a very prideful guy, but he loves a good battle, and he's kind of crazy and he can be controlled kind of thing. But Austin Butler himself, like, yeah, not bad. Like, it's not my biggest takeaway. My biggest takeaway is still Zendaya and Chalamet, and to a lot of degree Ferguson Bardem, just because he's funny. But
this cast is just spectacular all around. There's no weak link here. I agree.
Cast, yeah.
The ensemble is terrific.
Like, people were making fun of Walken. I was like, Walken's fucking great.
Walken is so good in the little he has to do. He brings so much authority, and like, it's all there. Like,
yeah, it's like I know that he's doing Walken voice, and then they didn't change it. So sometimes I hear it, I kind of laugh because he does his pauses in between the sentences. But I was like, Walken's great. He gives me the sense of an emperor that is at the end of his power. You know what I mean? He knows that he's at the end of his line here. And he also is a weak emperor himself because he's like a piece of shit. You know what I mean? And that is shown in his face and his eyes, the way that Villeneuve zooms in. Getting back to Butler, though, what I liked about Butler is his physique. They specifically were showing, like, you know, how buff he is and chiseled he is, but just how it is so not completely different, but like quite different from Paul Atreides's physique, right? So it's like, here you go. Like, this is, it's like a Logan situation, like X-23 versus Logan. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's very much, I mean, it's very much a, I don't want to say a mirror, but it's like, if you can take all of the other elements and reverse them, that's what you're getting with it, right? And it's really effective.
Yeah. Would you get, did you guys talk about his voice?
Oh, of course. Him doing this Stellan Skarsgård impression, yes. but to me, it sounds French Canadian, and I'm like, whatever it is, I love it. Like, it's so.
It was a choice.
I was so excited to just hear him talk in this movie, and it's like it's so channeled and my main takeaway is I'm fine with Butler. Like, I liked him in Elvis. I've seen him in 2-3 things now, so I'm like, you know. My takeaways aren't like super strong beyond he's good at what he does, but like coming off of Elvis and then watching this, I'm like, I'm digging this guy. Like, if he's going to keep going out there and doing stuff, cool. I'm down for it. He seems like he's up for it. He seems like a nice, good old boy in interviews. I'm down for this Butler.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to Bike Riders, cause I'm a big Jeff Nichols fan. So like him starring in that. Cool. He's showing me he can do a wide range of stuff already. Can he lead a motorcycle drama with Tom Hardy?
With Tom Hardy,
I bet he can. Like, I'm not sure. Right. So sure.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like, if I were to compare this to like another blockbuster from last summer, Top Gun Maverick, where Glenn Powell like leaps off the screen in the time that he is on the screen. You know what I mean? Like, Austin is not really doing that for me in terms of the same level of it. But it is effective. It's not as though he's like a throwaway guy. He, again, his screen time here is very limited, but it's very effective in what he's doing. So I dug that about it. And again, Austin, his star has been on the rise for a while too, right? So it's not as though this is like his breakout role. He's led movies before, you know what I mean?
It's a different kind of performance. So it's like, I know the Sting stuff in that the 84 movie. So I'm like, I want to see this. I want to see Austin Butler play this character. And, you know, because it's the main thing is there's a giant duel at the end. And it's great. It's a cool duel. Like, I'm all for a good one-on-one knife duel. Like, that's fun. It's fun to watch. And it delivers. It's a really well composed fight sequence.
Exactly. Yeah. That was my takeaway from it too, which is it's very legible. And that is something I kind of wasn't expecting from this movie, where that's much more like in a martial arts slash like maybe like a stuntman turned director, David Leitch, Chad Stahelski type of situation where they know how to film action. This one, well done. It looked like Chalamet and Butler had really practiced a lot, you know, and it was almost a Creed type situation where they shadow fought with, you know, wooden knives kind of thing until they got the choreography down pat, you know. Obviously, not all of it is Chalamet and not all of it is Butler. And they have like really good cuts, but still very legible. Not a whole ton of like, you know, mid frame style close ups and whatever else. It's a lot of wide. And that was really refreshing to see, especially at such a climactic point in the movie.
Yeah, it's a good fight.
Yeah.
You fought well, Atreides.
See, mine is more like, you fought well, Atreides.
You fought well, Atreides. I'm not practicing it enough.
Yeah, I want to get into some other characters real quick. So again, Bardem is kind of like the comedic character by default, but he's not doing it on purpose. Sure. You know,
in the first half, they welcome you in. It's like, yes, we're going to be in the desert a bit. We need to have a little bit of levity.
We got to have a guy who's carrying the load here comedically. But again, it's not that he's not telling jokes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's also like not out of like, let's just make a quick joke here. You know what I mean? Like, it's this guy really believes in the prophecy, and he's just like this dude who wants to really, he's got some quips sometimes. So it really works out there. Ferguson, I think, is doing excellent work in this movie. Like, Ferguson herself, for what she has to do physically, you know, convulsing and kind of talking to herself kind of thing. But also for what I talked about when she's talking about like with the previous mother, Reverend Mother Bene Gesserit, that's like, guys, like, no, I'm the captain now, kind of thing, right? And it's, I think it's really powerful, for what she's doing there. Is it as good as like Rose the Hat? Maybe not, but you know, it's pretty good, for what it's doing in terms of menacing, formidable figure. Brolin, I didn't know what happened to Gurney in the first one. I obviously remember that he didn't die. Brolin here brings a level of, it's almost like the latch to the past, but it also, again, is this the revenge angle, the vengeance angle. And I dug that Gurney is able to kind of help guide Paul again very quickly. He's like, I got all the nukes. That part is just great because he's like, look, man, I'm all here. Like, I'm still on planet because I want to kill these guys and you're going to help me. And that's a really compelling character to have because it's kind of like a descendant of his father, but also like a bit of Paul's past kind of thing. Pew just here for like a few minutes. Not bad. I didn't a lot of great costume design for her. But the person that is great, Lea Seydoux, just shows up for a spell. You know what she does? Seduces Fade Wright or Fade Rotha, and like gets some intel for the Reverend Mother, and then just leaves. It's
That
not
bit
bad.
where she comes in, the bloodline secure, puts her hand on her belly.
Yeah,
Done.
exactly.
That's
It's a girl, like you requested.
yeah.
But that whole entire scene where she's following him using you know Bene Gesserit tricks, really well shot, you know what I mean? Like pretty like it made me feel a little bit disoriented too with the way that Villeneuve chose to portray that. I want to get into some detail stuff real quick. So I like the detail that again the House Atreides does not give a fuck about Harkonnen. They know that they are brutal fighters, as you mentioned, you know, in your nice voice inflection, the way that Brolin says in the first one. But as evidenced by Duncan Idaho just like fucking people up on his own when he's trying to get to a helicopter in the first one, Josh Brolin, people are like, Josh Brolin, how did he get through all these Harkonnens, like, you know, on the way to try and fight Dave Bautista's? Like, Atreides don't give a fuck about Harkonnen. That's why Harkonnen needed the Sardaukar in the first one, because they're like, we can't win this battle unless we have you guys helping us out here. And you know, the Sardaukar show up because the Emperor's like, go ahead and do it. And that's who fuck up the Atreides more so than the Harkonnens. But Brolin just like steamrolling through people at the end there, I was like, this is fucking great.
It helps that he's their best fighter outside of Duncan Idaho.
Yeah,
He's
that's true.
the other. He and Duncan taught Paul everything he
Paul,
knows.
exactly. But people were like, how is he fucking people up so badly? He's like, dude, he's an incredible fighter. That's what it is. That's how he's like the leader of like their general. He's the general of their army kind of thing. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
that's not even one of the filming days that he had. He just showed up and did
He just
that.
showed up and was mad.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was like a detail that I really liked too. And obviously there's an enormous amount of physical detail in the movie, which from the like the worms kind of just like you see like their air holes, they never really explain, but you kind of see that they exist. Like it's all great stuff. So yeah, it was a really fun experience all around. And wherever this story goes is wherever the story goes. But I think for what Denis was be able to film here on IMAX cameras and his vision of things, it just I don't think Denis has made necessarily like a bad film at all. Like people, I actually did you guys ask this question? Like, how does this where if you guys have any favorite Denis films?
Yeah, we had that in our feedback as far as
Yeah.
favorite Denis films. I haven't ranked his films.
Yeah, I haven't ranked it either. I mean, I still think Sicario is up there and I still think Arrival is up there too. But these Dune, like the two Dune together, just from the visual standpoint, visualization of things, pretty great. But I think that there's some of the stuff that I appreciate from his other movies, including Enemy to some degree too.
And Enemy is still my top, but Dune's
Yeah.
like the two Dunes are right there. Again,
Okay. Yeah, I haven't really ranked it either.
I haven't ranked it because I could, but it's more, I haven't seen two of his movies. I've seen Polytechnic, but I haven't seen Incendies and the other one that he has. So I'm like, my letterboxed rule of I'm not ranking until I have seen all of the movies is
Yeah.
in effect.
Yeah,
Like
that's fine.
the bigger point is it's a lot of good stuff. Like he's a very good director.
Yeah, he's a really good director.
That it's consistently churned out really good movies. Like I'm not even the biggest on Prisoners compared to a lot of people, but like it's not like Prisoners is bad. Like there's so much good in all of his movies.
It's a little long, yeah.
it's long.
Deakin shot it and Deakin does great work. Sorry, the other thing I was gonna say in terms of detail is Fade Rotha has to go and fight in the gladiator type scene. You guys talked about like the Inca plot.
We talked all about how fucking cool the look of that whole sequence is.
Yes. Yeah. But you know how their son is like blacked out. So like they are all black and white. But again, House Atreides, good warriors because they don't drug one of the guys and he has a hard time fighting him. You know what I mean? Like these are details that are probably in the book, but also just Villeneuve has kind of gone to different lengths in both films to show you and kind of hopefully explain to you that House Atreides, not one to mess around with either. You know what I mean? And that's what makes that sequence fun is not only that you have, you know, this gladiator style thing, but it actually kind of is a challenge. And Fade Rotha is a fucking wild man. And it obviously he wins out. But it wasn't without getting a couple kicks in his chest too. Yeah. Oh, also, did you notice this? Not that you had to, but his fighting style is very mirrored in that gladiator sequence and in the final sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he does like one of the moves, he actually does stab our guy, our Asian friend in the gladiator battle. Mm-hmm. But Paul is able to counter it. It's actually really clever what they did that.
Yeah, no, I like seeing that's like I like observing in these kind of movies when there's like specific styles in play and like things that they're picking up on. It's like, it's just stupid, but Brad Pitt in it as Achilles and Troy has like signature moves that he does he repeats. That it's like it's fun to see like them, yes, like utilize these things and see like how they play out
right
differently. The Raid has that a lot as well. I just had one. Star Wars. Because there's all these different lightsaber styles that have names that I do not know because I can only remember so much. Uh-huh. But they're like numbers. There's like fighting, like Obi-Wan's fighting style 2 or something like that. It's there. And it's, you know, with all these animated shows and what have you, you can see them like do the different styles and things. So it's like, it's neat to see, yes, how the various fights or what have you, yes, reprise tactics, move strategies that are like established, that are purposely established.
Right. Because it's always weird when some guy's like, how did you become an incredible fighter over the span of like 45 minutes here? I had a question for you. Where does this world go if Villeneuve doesn't do Messiah? Are you sort of thinking that, oh, well, they could spin this off into prestige TV or they could spin this off into other things? Like, how does your mind work on this?
Well, two things. One, Villeneuve's gonna do the third movie.
Okay.
Like they'll pay him whatever they want to get him to be involved and write this eventually or what have you. But the other plan is that they are making a Bene Gesserit TV show. Like that's been in the works. So
I heard that, but I haven't seen anything lately.
Yeah. I mean it's
because Ferguson's been that, right?
I would assume so, but okay. I mean that's been the plan and still is. Like they've made updates here and there. It's not like you know, there's a lot. Warner Bros. Has a lot of things going on. Like they're not gonna, and they have this movie. They don't need to like say also TV show right now. They have this movie currently kicking ass in the box office.
Right, right.
And they got to deal with all their other shows. They got the Batman show. They got that Penguin show. They're making and everything too. So it's like, you know.
Oh yeah.
One thing at a time. But that is their idea, and you know, it's a movie studio dealing with a hot property that has a giant world attached to it. I'm not gonna be shocked if they make other announcements, whether it's in the near future or the later future, as far as how to keep this Dune train rolling while it's still hot. So so we'll see what happens. But I mean, the short term, it's there'll be a Dune 3, you know, a few years from now, and there'll be a Bene Gesserit TV series sometime in the near future as well.
Okay.
Got it. I'm all for it. Like I, you know, as one that, as I've mentioned, I has one that's not a Dune acolyte in any way. I didn't read the book. I saw the Lynch movie only for the first time a couple years
ago. Acolyte, very apt word for this podcast, by the way.
Exactly. So it's like, it's not like I have this preconceived notion of, man, they're going to finally give me all the Dune stuff that I've been waiting for. It's like, no, I've just enraptured in what's been presented to me so far. And it's like, yeah, cool. Give me more of that. I'm down. So
Understandable. Before we take off and close things out here, I do want to get into some of the things that didn't work for me necessarily. Not that they held me back in any way, but obviously, like, not everything is praise in this movie, right? So I talked about some of the pacing here and some of the storyline elements. I think it's kind of also been widely remarked that, you know, this it's very quick in terms of how it goes. Specifically, like, hey, you know, I'm Paul Atreides. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go south. Paul, you got to go south. I guess I'm going south now. You know what I mean? And then, I don't want to take this life, the water of life. I guess I got to take the water of life now. I guess I'm the Messiah now, and I'm going to go lead them to war. And the war is the battle scene. Like, Gurney and you guys come up from the east, you know, Stilgar, you come from, like, the west, and I'll come from the north. And Chani, you come from, like, you know, the southwest or whatever. It's like, and the battle is over pretty quickly. And then they get to...
Plan works.
When
the plan comes together. I mean,
can't especially like the mother of all storms. Like,
can't complain when, you know, everything worked the way you strategized.
Yeah, that's why you strategize. That's more like the Emperor's fault, right?
That's like complaining that the football play was too good. It's like, well, you mapped it out and they did it. Like, they ran the play.
But I certainly see this criticism of people saying, like, it just moves along very quickly. It's like, I know, but you can't watch a 6-hour movie either. Like, it just doesn't really. They do have to have some executive decisions here around what they're cutting and how they get to things.
I'd be more than happy to watch this for another hour. Like, the movie.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
It wraps me up in it so well that it's like, just give me all of this, please. I look forward to having this at home where I can, like, put on Dune and then put on Dune 2 immediately and just have a whole, you know, 6-hour, you know, 5.5-hour, whatever, just kind of like sitting here and enjoying all of this.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that either, obviously, but I certainly observe those things and I acknowledge them for sure, because it is, like, quite convenient to some degree, but at the same time, we all know where this story is going to go, and I think people are kind of, like, leading up to, like, a battle scene, and that battle scene is very good, and, you know, the Sardaukar, like, as competent and I don't know about arrogant, but they're just, like, very self-assured of themselves as they were. They just got defeated pretty quickly from a bunch of freedom fighters. So it was in the mist, no less, right?
And, you know, they had desert power on their side as well. didn't hurt. Have giant worms as back.
Yeah, the giant worms, like, fucking up all, like, those spaceships, and then
speaking of worm stuff for a bit. We don't need to go over how awesome the worms are in full size, because we did that a lot on the other episode. But suffice to say, they rock. But the pool with the small worm in it that they had to deal and, like, get the holy water or whatever out of the water of life out of the worm. Boy, was that, like, detailed, and it, like, that felt like a Ridley Scott scene to me, as far as, like, seeing the process, seeing it all go down, as far as, okay, holy woman goes to the pool, attracts the worm over, grabs the worm, and it's a baby worm, right? So you're like, oh, that's what it looked like, a worm. I mean, it's not too surprising, but at the same time, it's like, well, that's neat, because, you know, they're so cute.
Kind of gross, too.
Okay, very gross.
I didn't expect them to have this level of detail when she goes into the pool.
Yeah, and then what happens, like, okay, so she drowns the thing, and then goes inside of it and gets the gunk out, and that's the water of life, and, like, oh boy,
no filtration either. It's just straight from the source.
Straight from the source, just the milk right off the cow. that was a lot of detail. I'm like, I'm all into this. This is such a, like, I'm all seeing in these processes of, like, how this stuff works. That includes the same with, like, the water, like, the extracting water from dead Harkonnen. That's just good stuff. I could watch Fremen doing their rituals all day at this point.
One guy was like, please don't, and Zendaya's like, man, shut the fuck up. And stabs him,
pushes his head down, like, go away, stop talking. You're bothering me.
Like, you're gonna die here, just don't fight this, my guy.
Another good little bit that we like, there's that whole, like, Fremen attack on one of the sand crawler things.
I actually wanted to talk about this too,
which is super cool. But, like, beyond just, like, the fact that they're doing it, there's a bit where it's all happening very quickly. Paul's fighting off he causes the distraction, so the gun starts shooting at him from the helicopter thing. He like dives in, gets Shade, and meanwhile Zendaya's like shot a rocket off. Mm-hmm. And I love the cut, like once it gets into the thing, like it breaks the shield, the cutaway back to Chani as she's running in the sand, and yeah. you can hear her like slightly chuckling at the fact like it worked, as uh-huh. the thing's like then falling down in the background. Just yeah. cool. Just cool action like that. That's cool.
Yeah. I think the first time I saw it, I was like, oh shit, that's fucking dope. Because they're running, they're small, and yeah, this is Villeneuve's sense of scale.
Uh-huh.
The explosions are huge. And yeah. the legs are obviously huge on like this spider crawly like spice harvester thing. Uh-huh. But again, Zendaya, you know, not short, like at least like 5'10". Chalamet 6 feet. These people are running across the screen as like giant pieces of machinery are exploding in the background. It's fantastic. Also, the other scene that happens is another spice scene, but from Gurney. And what I like about that is two things. One of them, the scale part. Again, Gurney is walking toward... He doesn't know it's Chalamet yet, but he's walking toward the battle. He like, fuck this, I'm gonna go, I'm a warrior. And you know, his pilot guy's like exploding in the background too. It's like there's a yeah. component of the ship thing that's just exploding. Like, this is fucking what a visual sight. The other part of that,
every uh-huh. like these just these great desert shots of just yes, emphasizing the scale, but emphasizing how like nothing there is around all of it. It's just so yeah. cool. Whenever they're like, you know, like you just mentioned the Gurney scene, the floating that's doing with him, or the floating with the Harkin at the beginning of the movie where they're just kind of floating.
You're making me think of so many things right now. Yeah.
There's just so much like cool, like tech stuff that's yeah. not overemphasized, and it's great.
Yep. The other scene in the Gurney part was the magnetic mines. I was yeah. like, I'd never seen this before.
That's
this.
Cool.
At first I was like, I don't know what's happening. And then he shouts out mine. And I was like, this is really cool. Like, this is a really cool design for a mine that is magnetic, but looks like a flat piece of, I don't know what, like a car or something.
Uh-huh.
One of them gets the machine. He shoots another one down, which is a really cool sequence. But then another one gets to the machine. He's like, who thought of this? Like, this is, unless it's written in the book specifically that they're shaped this way. I was like, this is really cool design. And the other part's like, yeah. The first, like within the first 5 minutes of this movie, the Harkonnen scout team is like, climb. And they push a button and they just start floating. Yeah. And I was like, oh shit, this is fucking dope. Cause I had seen the starter car floating down in the first one. But to see them do this, I was like, this is really inventive, guys. Like, good on this team for getting me hooked immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, good yeah. stuff.
Dune 2.
Go see.
Are you going to go watch it again?
If I can, okay. I got like 2 weeks left for while it's still in IMAX. So I'll, yeah. see, I'll see what's possible. Because if I'm going to see it again, I'd rather see it in 70 millimeter. What am I doing tomorrow?
70 millimeter? What do you mean?
In IMAX. In the 70
yeah, millimeter. But did you already see the previous two in IMAX too?
I saw it the second time I saw it in IMAX.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, yes, I. Me seeing it again is like, well, if I'm going to see it again, I'm going to
yeah.
still do it on the biggest way possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I see. Yeah, I would
that's
agree.
My joy. And I'm yeah, doing
that's your Anya Taylor joy.
I could exactly. I could maybe fit this in tomorrow. Look at their schedule over here. And see what I can pull off.
You know, think about it. I mean, AMC will think, or Regal will thank you.
This movie's so long, so it's like if it's going to be like a 11 yeah. o'clock show, maybe not. But I'll get that going. Are you going to see it again?
I might. If my buddy wants to go see it again, I'll go check it out. And my other buddies, I was talking to them. I was like, hey man, like, I know you guys went to go see this. Did you guys what format did you watch this in? And they're like, oh, we watched it with Emeryville or AMC Dolby, right? And it's like, AMC Dolby's fine. The screen's like a little bit wide. So it's probably more for like, you know, like 235 slash like format. I remember watching the creator there, and I was like, oh yeah, this makes much more sense because the creator is kind of shot in that way. But then I was talking to them, and I was saying, if you guys can go check it out in 70mm IMAX, that'd be great. And if you guys do, let me know, because I'm happy to go see it with you guys, along with like my other buddy who also loved the movie and got sick before we were supposed to go on the second showing. But yeah, I might go check it out again. I think that it would be probably a worthwhile endeavor, primarily because the pacing moves a lot
faster. It's
still
like sold out. Like, good God. Like, we're looking at like a 7 o'clock show.
It's an Oppenheimer situation, man.
It's like, still like packed.
Even the morning show is sold out around me.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You don't want to do that.
Not even like a possibility to go. This
yeah,
is crazy.
So,
it's making its bucks.
Yeah, it is. And it's fantastic. Movies are back, baby.
Work?
I think that you just call in sick, I think, for like the whole day.
I guess so.
But even then, like, oh, you know, you got to pretend to be sick the next day. So you might as well just try and do it like on a Thursday or a Friday. But all that being said, I probably will go and try and check it out again if two parties are interested, because I think it's a visual feast. It is it's great storytelling. Like in terms of we talked about it, you and I tonight, about, you know, how deep these connections are. Like, maybe they're not as deep as like something that is written, you know, that just won an Academy Award kind of thing, but still Villeneuve's storytelling style is much more on the screen. And as however you decided to interpret what he said in, I forget, it was like the Variety article or whatever, he's like, you know, I don't really like dialogue. I think TV is kind of, that's more of like a TV thing. I'm more for visual spectacle. However you decide to take that, whether it's good or bad, it's true. He makes visual spectacle films. All of his movies, you know, like maybe like some of them have different, maybe better dialogue in them, but you can't knock him for knowing what he wants to show you and how effective it is when you see it.
Yeah, well, I agree. Okay. I think we've had a good time talking about a bit more Dune here.
Dune too.
Well, it's been out now there, and you can find this podcast everywhere. You know,
yeah, we're online.
All the places. Yeah. But yeah, yeah, that's it. That's been this. It's been out on Nights.